May all beings be happy, may all beings be healthy, may all beings be free from harm, may all beings love life, may all beings awaken. Welcome to another Cuke Audio podcast. I'm DC Poobah of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, preserving the legacy of Shunyu Suzuki and those whose paths crossed his, and anything else that comes to mind. I'm coming to you from Sleepy Sonur with Dogga Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka. I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable and free from any economic hardship, and able to get out and do whatever you want within the limits of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. Can't do much better than that. Today is the second installment of Tassajara Stories, the second piece. And this one is called Early On. So after pause to meditate, I will read you the draft I have of Early On. And like last week, I have not looked at it for I don't know how long. Half a year. And we'll see, maybe something can come of it. You're welcome to send me any suggestions you have to dchad, dchad, at cuke.com, cuke.com. So when you hear the bell, hit pause, if you wish, and meditate or whatever for as long as you wish, and when you're through, hit unpause. And then we will hit the bell. Meditation will be over. And we'll see what's happening here with Tassajara Stories. And maybe continue to hear Dogga Bandita in the distant background, barking maybe at a cat. So here we go with the second piece, Early On. Back in the fall of 1966, the word going round Zen Center was that a remote place in the woods down south was being looked at as a possible retreat or monastery. Suzuki had looked at land as far back as 1962 when Graham and Pauline Petchy took him to see land Richard Hebe was offering up north in Jenner. None of them were quite right, and the time wasn't right yet either. But Suzuki had seen something new. But Suzuki had seen something new with Richard Baker and was pleased. That land was not Tassajara. It was the nearby horse pasture, a 160-acre inholding owned by the same couple that owned Tassajara, Bob and Anna Beck. A group went down to look at the land, among them Richard Baker, Silas Hoadley, Ed Brown, a friend of Jeannie Baker's named Yvonne Rand, a naturalist and psychoanalyst Sterling Bunnell, and poet Gary Snyder. Snyder was close with a few people in the Zen Center. He knew Baker and Claude Dallenberg, and he and Claude Dallenberg went back over a decade. He'd left his little trailblazing Zendo, Marin An, friends and colleagues, and gone to Japan in 1956 to join other friends and colleagues in Zen trailblazing. He'd been back to the U.S. some till the final return in 1968. Graham Pecci met him at a funeral at Sokoji in the early 60s and had him and his wife, poet Joanne Kiger, over for dinner. When Snyder returned from his years in Japan, he lived a couple blocks from Sokoji and visited Shunyu Suzuki at times to chat in Japanese, and Suzuki had been to his house for breakfast to visit with him and his Japanese wife, Masa. Snyder didn't see Suzuki as a teacher for him, nor did he feel comfortable with the Zen Center's social scene, the little there was. He thought that koan practice was a more effective path, but he liked Suzuki and he was happy to help out. So he and a dozen others hiked into the horse pasture. It takes an hour by trail from the road to the fields, and most of it was on a gradual slope. But it was beautiful, and there was water. The group took a little trail down to Tassajara Creek and walked on in to Tassajara. A key selling point of the horse pasture seemed to be that it was near the springs. On the way to soak in the hot spring plunges, after hours of hiking, someone said, "Hey, where's Yvonne?" Most people walk along, taking in the scenery as a whole, while keeping an eye on the path in front where they're stepping. Yvonne and her friend Sterling Bunnell had been admiring particular plants, geological formations, spotting birds, and naming and discussing it all. They'd lagged behind some, and then she lagged behind Bunnell, who saw the little Tassajara marker where a trail branches off. Yvonne, however, was paying attention to other details at that spot and continued on and on and on for a few miles, all the way to Willow Creek, just past where it meets Tassajara Creek. It was easy to cross. The water gets quite low in the fall. On the other side, she came to the Willow Creek Trail, and a sign that indicated Tassajara was 4 miles to the right, going up creek. A few hours later, she could barely see another trail going up to the right. There was a sign. It was getting so dark she couldn't quite read it, but she took it. Guided by faint moonlight on her way down on the other side, exhausted and thirsty, she met a search party looking for her. She was on the rugged and steep Tony Trail, which feeds right into the Tassajara property. We were hustling for money to buy the horse pasture. We could start off with tents quickly, build some structures, whatever. We could do it. Then all of a sudden, in late December, we heard the exciting news that the money we'd raised had been used as a down payment on Tassajara Springs. What we'd heard and what was printed in the Zen Center's windbill was that acquiring Tassajara would possibly follow in time. It was double the cost and, anyway, wasn't available yet. Years later, Anna Beck shook her head at that understanding. We were always ready to sell. And in a scrapbook of old newspaper clippings and photos, I saw some ads to lease or sell Tassajara going back as far as late 1964. At the time we bought it, there were other parties interested, a horseback riding club, a gun club. Mel Lane, who was the publisher of Sunset Magazine and vice president of PG&E. When they had the time, Bob and Anna were antique dealers who'd buy at flea markets in the morning and sell at antique shows in the afternoon. They knew what things were worth. The 7 years they had Tassajara, it was a constant struggle to stay afloat and pay it off. They loved Tassajara, but wanted to get out from under it. Still, they knew they had a unique property and were holding out for what they thought it was worth. Then they met Suzuki and Baker. Bob told about being with them at the first place on the road from which one can almost see Tassajara. Where Tassajara is a few thousand feet down and miles away, it's a spot now called Ashes Point. Bob said, when Suzuki Roshi saw Tassajara, he looked from where you first come down after you pass the Church Creek Road, just where you start the switchbacks. There's a place there where you can pull out. I can't remember what the point is called. That's where he looked from. He looked and he knew this was the place. There was never any question in his mind, I think. He and Dick together, he knew that it was going to happen. And I guess I knew it was going to happen, too. It was a question of how we did it. I think Dick knew it, too. When we sat there on Bush Street and negotiated, it was all kind of foreordained, and it was just a question of filling in the details. That's what we did. It happened. Suzuki had told Bob, "You're a Buddhist." At first, Bob wondered if Suzuki was trying to trick him, but then he said, "That impressed me, and I felt a kinship with him. I don't know why, because at that time I knew very little about Buddhism." Bob and Anna were also impressed with Richard, and Bob loved wrestling with him over the price and the conditions and about life, love, philosophy. I think he liked dragging it out so they could meet more. Baker seemed to like dealing with him, too. Bob was competitive. I've played board games with him and his family and experienced that firsthand. But he was cooperative as well, an interesting combination of the two. So at first it was the horse pasture. But then, with the support that started flowing in, the prospects of coming up with $300,000 looked good. And Bob said that Anna's pregnancy had also made it apparent they should sell soon. Anna told me, "The deal with Richard to change from the horse pasture to Tassajara was made at a Japanese restaurant on Broadway Street in San Francisco. Bob and Richard did the talking. Anna was 9 months pregnant and said the lights were being turned off by the time they left. She says They did think they could have sold it for more and did come down in price, and that they both really wanted the Zen Center to have it. It was originally listed for $450,000. Then came to $375,000 for Zen Center, and then $350,000, and finally $300,000. "We were impressed with Suzuki and Richard," she said. "I felt like we were handmaidens of Buddha." As soon as the deal was made, Howard Campbell went down to Tassajara as a caretaker. He and his wife Jeannie had been living in and taking care of the baby Berkeley Zendo. There were two couples at Tassajara who'd been with the Becks for some years. A few weeks later, Suzuki and Baker came to visit. What they saw shocked them. Shocked and dismayed them. The kitchen had been torn down. Howard had heard that the kitchen had been condemned by the county. He'd been told that there were plans to build a new kitchen and thought he'd help get things moving along. Didn't think to ask for permission. The little shack in back that had served as a staff kitchen and dining area had been converted into the temporary kitchen. It already had a 4-burner propane stove, table, and 4 chairs. Now the larger 4-burner from the demolished kitchen was in there with a propane refrigerator. It was to become the temporary kitchen for 3 years. The large walk-in reefers on the creek side of the deck had not been torn down and were big enough to keep a good deal of produce, dairy, and meat cool. They were powered by electricity from generators up in the shop. Earlier in 1966, Alan Winter and Ed Brown had come to the Zen Center together to give it a try. They kept coming. They also both worked for the Becks at Tassajara before the Zen Center bought it. Alan did so first. He was working there when Suzuki and Baker came to visit. "I remember when Suzuki came to have a meal with the crew. Jim Cook, the bartender, had prepared for him a so-called Zen macrobiotic meal with brown rice and placed it before him. Suzuki Roshi gave a disgusting look and pushed the bowl aside and reached over to a plate of hamburgers. He latched on to one and took a big bite out of it. I thought Jim would pass out. I saw this as one of Suzuki Roshi's spontaneous lessons." They learned how to bake bread there. Both of them later became the head cook at Tassajara, and both baked a lot of bread and taught others to do so. Ed was a dishwasher for the Becks first. He asked the cooks, Ray Herslander and Jim Vaughn, to teach him how to make that great bread. "So then," he says, "I was dishwasher, pot scrubber, and bread baker." Ed says the bread was made in a traditional way, the sponge method, with the dough sitting, rising, with about half the flour which would develop the bloom of the dough, the depth of flavor, as well as the sour and natural yeasts taking time to work for the bread to rise. In the era of Wonder Bread, it hit the palate of Tassajara guests like a glorious discovery. And it had a spiritual lineage. Ray and Jim's mentor was a jazz musician named Alan Hooker, who'd been a baker at the Theosophical Society in Columbus, Ohio. He met Krishnamurti there and followed him to Ojai. So Ray and Jim had learned from Hooker at Ojai and applied it in Big Sur before ending up at Tassajara. Ed says, the chefs were talented and made good, hearty food. Not vegetarian, but with lots of vegetables. Their casseroles were legendary. In the office, one could buy the Tassajara Springs cookbook with an introduction by Bob Beck that stated, if Tassajara cooking has a national flavor, it is basically American with French thoroughness and seasoning and a Chinese emphasis on kindness to vegetables. The French influence was no accident, as the Becks had lived in France. Their French wedding certificate was mounted on the wall of their home in Carmel. They served quality wine from Peter Scaglione's Live Oaks Vineyards in Gilroy. The book was only available for their last guest season. It credits Ray and Jim, Bob's mother Gladys, and wife Anna as the key contributors, and others, including guests such as photographer Morley Bear's wife Frances, rancher neighbor Bill Lambert, and his daughter-in-law Rose. It points out there's a recipe from an earlier owner, Gela Sapak, quote, from whom we inherited Tassajara's reputation for food. The Beck soon learned that the Sunset Magazine cookbook was also a contributor to their cookbook. Ray and Jim had forgotten the source of a couple of recipes. The folks at Sunset were familiar with Tassajara and didn't care as long as the book was just sold there. There's even a nod to a new cook, Ed Brown, who would continue and elaborate on this rich and wholesome tradition we inherited from the Becks, as would many others who worked in the Tassajara kitchen and beyond the following year and years to come. So that's early on, the second piece. In Tassajara Stories. It's pretty short. When it says that they'd been looking for places for years, and the oldest one I could find reference to was 1962, when they went to see Richard Heeb's place up in Jenner. I looked into that, and I found Silas Hoadley mentioned it in an interview I did with him long ago. He said Richard Heeb offered a place to Suzuki Roshi up in Jenner, and Richard Baker and some others went up there. And Silas, too, and, you know, in what I read, it said Graham Penchy, I guess Graham had mentioned it. Silas says, Suzuki Roshi went out and found some bracken, some young ferns that hadn't even opened, and was delighted, and he cut them up and made a meal for everyone. And Richard said that he had the runs the next day like he'd never had before. Yeah, but he was delighted Suzuki Roshi had made this meal for him. Zen Center turned down the offer. Probably Suzuki Roshi did. It was incredibly lovely, right at the mouth of the Russian River, but it was awfully remote. Richard Heeb is a potter. I see here mention of him in a Peak U public record search, and these are up to date. I think it says Richard Jacob Heap, 90 years old, lives in Bonnie Doone, California, but has also spent time in Jenner, California, and Sebastopol, California. I also see Vintage Studio Pottery, Vintage Richard Heap Studio Art Pottery, Bowl 15, California, mid-century. They've got a few bowls of his. It says Vintage Studio Bowl, description and item information up for sale. He is a listed artist in the Vase Finder Online Museum. He was a student of Tony Prieto at Mills College in Oakland during the 1950s. He studied abroad in Japan. He was apprenticed and studied for 3 years with Master Potter, an important Minge folk art movement figure, Shoji Hamada. Oh, good Lord, Hamada was very famous. Maybe the most famous potter in Japan back then was Hamada. Heeb had a one-man show in Kagoshima, Japan. Heeb was a first prize winner for the 30th annual Kingsley Art Club exhibition at the Crocker Art Museum in Sacramento. During the late 1950s, Heeb was vice president of the Lodi Ceramic Guild and president of the Lodi Art Club. He worked in salt-glazed stoneware and luster-painted porcelain clay. He admired Japanese pottery, saying the work is not meticulous, nor is it cast with professional skill, but the conceptions of each piece are primitive and free of form. Besides pottery, Heeb also created prize-winning paintings and weavings. He received first prize for a weaving that was displayed at the 1948 Arts and Crafts Exhibition at the California State Fair. He studied at the Hagen Museum in Stockton, California, where he had a one-man show in 1956 displaying salt-glazed stoneware that he produced at Mills College. Well, it goes on with this pottery background. I got to meet Heeb and his wife, Laura, when Tim and Emma Buckley were married up there by Katagiri and Kobuncino assisting. When was that? I'm not sure. It's like 73 or something, or maybe a little later, 74, around there. And Harry Roberts, the shaman, Yurok shaman that Tim Buckley went on to become a sort of a successor of, cooked the salmon. And then I got hold of Laura and I talked to her on the phone some later and sort of reconnected them with Silas and Tim Buckley. Anyway, that's just a little something that came to mind when I read this. You know, a couple of other things I was thinking about is, you know, and maybe Alan Winter told me this in his interview. I'll look at it. And I don't know if I've ever asked Ed this, but how did they happen to go down to Tassajara in 66? Now, they went down after Suzuki and Baker had looked at it. So I always assumed Dick Baker suggested it, or it was just in the air or something. But Tassajara was a known place. But it does seem a little bit of a coincidence that it was sort of like preparing for us to buy it. But I've never gotten that connection. So I think I'll ask Alan. I'm in touch with him. I'm in touch with both of them. You know, and I love how I got all this from Ed Brown, the lineage of the bread. I think that's really cool. And another thing I want to look into, and I might already have it too, is Jim and Ray came from Esalen. Did they come from Esalen Institute? They were where the Krishnamurti, Ojai. They were at Ojai, where Krishnamurti was first. That's where they learned the bread baking from Hooker. Then they went to Big Sur, but was it Esalen? And the last comment I have about what I just read is the first Tassajara cookbook that we know of, the Tassajara Springs cookbook that Anna and Bob put together. And so just in that last year they owned it, that had mentioned Dad, it is on Cuke.com. Adam Beck, who has, son of the Becks. Bob Beck is not with us, but Anna is. She's in her 90s. Daya talked to her, Daya Goldschlag, who I, interviewed recently. We had a phone chat recently. She's talked to Anna recently. God, I should see if Anna would do a podcast. Anyway, Adam Beck kindly scanned it for me and sent a PDF. And so now, for the last few years, it's been on Cuke.com. Just, it's in the bibliography. Or you could just write Tassajara Springs Cookbook in the site search box. So, all right, there's that. And next week I'll read some more from some more pieces from Tassajara Stories, and maybe little by little something will come of it. Thanks a lot for joining us. And this has been a Cuke Audio podcast. I'm DC Booba of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, coming to you from Sleepy Sanur with Doggy Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka, and wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.